Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Janice Tunnell, your host of Beauty Talk. Tonight we have some exciting stuff going on. We have Marietta Cardin-Arcis back for part two of her discussion on the business of the beauty biz. And we also have Sarah Simon-Vance on. She's coming on to do her talk about HD makeup. Right, Sarah?
Yes, ma'am.
And then my sister is here, and she loves to talk. So,
oh my goodness! If you ever want to hear us argue, this is the topic of who talks the most.
Come on now.
Of who talks the most.
I know she has something to say, so go right ahead.
Good evening, everyone. I'm going to make this news really quick because there was a conversation starting before the theme music started, and I was getting kind of excited. So I kind of want to see if Sarah can hang on the line after her little segment, while we talk to Marietta.
Sure.
Okay, great. First of all, I want to say congratulations to Virtuous Wannabe. That's her name on YouTube, but Christian Simone is her name. I want to thank her for entering our contest for episode two of Beauty Talk. She wins the Smoky Eye giveaway, so we just want to encourage everyone to go out, check out Beauty Talk, and continue to leave your comments so that you'll automatically be entered into the contest for each episode. And speaking of each episode, episode three of Beauty Talk is now available on YouTube at youtube.com. /Illusions Cosmetics, and I'll put in the Beauty Lounge the actual link to that particular episode. But this particular episode, we interview Valente Frazier, so please go out, check that out, leave a comment so that you can enter our giveaway, and look forward to episode four and episode five really soon. Episode four is with Dion Phillips of D-Lashes, Lash Studio in Hollywood in Beverly Hills. Episode 5 is a great panel discussion that you don't want to miss. Janice and I, along with Maxie, Constance Foe, Dee Dee Kelly, and Tim Bucharin, it's going to be an interesting panel discussion. So look out for that really soon. All right, let's get started.
And I think one thing you missed, and I don't know the count, but in the month of October, every view of episode two, we were donating $1 to the Susan G. Komen Foundation for the Cure. So I don't know if my sister tallied up the numbers, but we did raise, I believe, over 400 some odd dollars or more for.
$531.
Yeah, $531 that goes to Susan G. Komen, Race for the Cure. So
wonderful.
I think that's a wonderful thing. Yes. So we want to get started. We want to start off with Sarah, and then Marietta will continue our conversation with you.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Okay. Go for it, Sarah. It's on you.
Oh, no. You know I have trouble talking. Hi, everyone. today I was going to talk a little bit about a product that I had played with a little bit but didn't really get to use until just recently and really, really liked it. I had a quick shoot. We were doing an outdoor shoot for the Crisis Pregnancy Center with a well-known pastor and an African-American pastor. And he was going to be jumping out of his car into my chair outside, not even under a tent or anything, and then right in front of the camera. And I had brought several different makeups. I brought my Gerda, and then I had also brought with me the Graftolbian Dual Finish Palette Powder. And I decided after seeing him, because he had fairly nice skin, except for around his beard area that had the dark discoloration, that I wanted to try this and see how it worked, and it worked beautifully. Because he didn't have a lot of problems with his skin, his color tone was fairly even in places other than in his beard area. I used the Graftolbian on him. It took me 5 minutes to put this on him. He went in front of camera, and he looked brilliant. And I really, 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 really like this for a quick makeup for someone that doesn't have a lot of problems. This is an absolutely wonderful product. And it had three, for the particular palette I had, it had three different shades for dark skin. And I was able to use all three in order to make him look natural for camera and not like he was made up. Had I used the Gerda, he would have looked made up because his skin was too nice. So it's a really, really, really nice product. And I think it's something that everyone should have in their, what was it? Esker was said, Pastor also wearing a wig. No, he was not wearing a wig. I have the little chat room just came up.
And, of course, Technicolor asked that question.
Uh-huh. But, and it was, I mean, lovely pastor, and one of the things in his heart is crisis pregnancies, you know, women that are having unwanted pregnancies but continuing through them. But it's an excellent, excellent product. I had not played with it enough, and I can't say enough about it, and I've used it several times since. I used it for the Clash of the Titans on the men for broadcast, and it worked beautifully. They didn't look made up, and they didn't look over-powdered. They looked just nice, even-toned, and fairly fresh. It's a really good product. So that's my 5 minutes of product for HD.
Now, what was the name of it again?
The Graftolbian Dual Finish Palette Powder.
Dual
it's like
finish.
A powder makeup, but it's not real heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a lot of pigment to it, and it really was nice. And I had not played with it before, and I've used it twice now. Both the second time, as I said, for Clash of the Titans, which is done by Regent University, and we had Charles Krautheimer,
mm-hmm.
and what is that governor? I want to say Ford, not governor, he's a senator, and he was African American, light skinned African American. I used it on him. I ended up using Anti Shine on James Carville because he didn't want anything else. And so it's an excellent product. It really, really is. And I would not have thought it would have looked good for HD, but it's proven to be quite a nice product to use, especially if you don't have a lot of time. And it's a quick makeup, and for people that don't really like having makeup on, it's really nice.
Right.
How did you apply it?
With a sponge.
Just powdered?
Yeah, with a sponge. I stipple.
Okay.
I don't want to streak it so that it doesn't leave a pattern on their face, and I stipple it in.
You stippled a dry or wet sponge?
It's a dry powder, but it's kind of I want to say it's like a base, but it's not a base. It's a very interesting product. It goes on almost like a mineral makeup, but it doesn't have that same kind of quality. It's got better pigment and no mica added to it.
Oh, that's good.
Does that make sense? Because most
mm-hmm.
is like bare minerals and these other mineral
right.
makeups, they add mica, which, one, is horrible for the skin, and, two, when everybody goes, ooh, the dewy look. No, on camera, it looks like sweat. Sorry.
Yeah.
When you're doing HD for broadcast, and you use something with a mica in it, it doesn't look like a dewy skin like it would in photography, which, of course, they also change with filters. For broadcast, it looks like their skin is sweaty. It doesn't have a really nice glow to it. You just don't want to use anything with mica on it for HD.
And then also, if I'm not mistaken, on darker skin, it can look really ashy.
Oh,
right.
Yes. Definitely. Horribly. Mm-hmm. Horribly ashy. You just don't. Yeah, it's not. Mica is not good. Mica is not our friend for
HD.
No,
it's not. For anything, in my opinion.
Well, no. I mean, the only time mica is good is if you want to have the shiny eyes, you know, and that's fine. Or you're using a glittery mica product to give that ethereal look, so they look like some heavenly body or something. But other than that, it just for HD, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things aren't up for HD.
Even though they say HD, that doesn't mean it's HD.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of things aren't our friends, I tell you.
They aren't. They just aren't. And there's a lot of companies now that are throwing HD in front of their names, but they're really not an HD makeup.
Right.
And so just because it says HD doesn't mean it is HD. It really has to be checked with people who work with the stuff all the time with different makeups. And just don't take the commercials' word for it.
Right.
They're selling. That's all they're doing. They're selling their product. Just because it has HD in front of it does not mean it is HD. Plain and simple.
Ditto.
I mean, I would think, just from experience, I would think really what makes a product HD is not necessarily, you know, a specific ingredient, but more so, you know, your technique.
Exactly. Totally.
Definitely.
And that, you know,
blendability.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And so that the skin texture still shines through the makeup, unless it's bad. And then you want to hide it. But, it's got to blend. Everything's got to flow. And colors have to be as natural as possible. You can't, it's not like it used to be when we were in regular analog or we were in 16-millimeter film to video. You could get away with a lot. The grain was really high, and it did the blending for you. You could make a lot of mistakes, and it wouldn't show. That's not the way it is now. You have got to be skilled, and you have to practice at it always,
mm-hmm.
every single day. And there's
mm-hmm.
even days that I've been doing this for over 20-some-odd years, and there are mornings I'll get done. They'll go in front of the camera, and I'll go, ugh, that did not work. And I'm just, you know, I'm highly experienced. You just have to keep doing it. It's trial and error, and keep going, and don't stop.
Exactly.
Okay. Have I talked enough?
That was good.
I'm trying to be good, because you know me. I'll go off on little bunny trails. It's all good, though.
Yeah, it's all good. Don't be afraid there.
Be very, very afraid.
Oh, my.
Well, now it's Marietta's turn.
Okay. So now, Marietta, the ball is on you. But I just want everyone to know if they have questions or want to make a comment, they can call in at 1-914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399.
Or also you can... ask your question in the chat room. Marietta's in the chat room. If you have any HD questions, Sarah's in the chat room. So just type away.
We're all in here.
Marietta, I wanted to ask you, because the last show you were on, you were telling us about the process that you went through to get a check for a job that you did. And now that we're continuing the conversation on this, I just wanted to ask you how far have you gotten with that? Because I know you received the check. They shorted your check about $7, I believe. And
yeah, it was two checks, and they took out $7.20 out of each check, which I never,
okay.
I couldn't understand why.
So where are you with that now?
Well, I actually got it after sending several emails, because I was like, you know, what's going on? And then they sent back to me, one email came back and said, well, you decided to, you changed the terms of the agreement and wanted your check earlier. That's why we shorted the check, because it, since you wanted it earlier, you fall into what the vendor discount, meaning that it costs you money.
What?
To change terms from 45 days turnaround to 30 days turnaround. So now it costs you 2% to get your money earlier. Well,
wow.
I went ballistic, obviously. I kind of lost it, and I'm like, I never changed any terms. I haven't discussed anything with anybody, you know? So finally, after back and forth emails, I got an email today that says she works in NBC Finance, and basically she spoke to accounts payable, and they went in and took me off the vendor discount list that I was incorrectly added to. I didn't even know I was added to a vendor discount list because it wasn't something that I requested. Uh-huh. So now the situation has been rectified, and they're going to cut the difference and send out to me. But it just goes to show, if you don't pay attention to all these different little things that they pull out of your check, could you just imagine this happening to a good 700, 800, 9,000 people, you know?
Right.
That's a bit of money right there.
Yeah.
Then there's companies that make you wait longer than they said they were going to. It took me 3 months to get a check from Fox News when it was supposed to be within 30 days. And they said, I kept calling and calling and calling, and they said, oh, so-and-so's taking care of it. And then I call, and I finally get the head guy, and he goes, he didn't do any of it. I found it sitting on the bottom of his desk. It's just been sitting there.
But that's what happened. That's why you have to it's, you know, it's like I try to tell aspiring artists, it's not enough to just hone your craft. It's
mm-hmm.
like you've got to hone the business skills, because you constantly have to follow up on your money. And if you don't have some kind of system noting when you've sent out that check, that invoice, and knowing when the turnaround time is supposed to be, and start to look for your check in the mail and do your follow-ups regularly. First, you got to do the follow-up and make sure that they received your invoice. So every time I send an invoice out, I always say, please acknowledge receipt of this invoice.
See, I handed it directly to the producer on site.
That's the worst thing you could do. That is by far the worst thing you could do.
Well, he actually to accounting. It's accounting that didn't do anything with it once they got it.
But even then, even handing it to them, send the mail, jog his memory to find out from accountants.
Yeah,
or get
never called me back. It was his superior that finally called me. The accountant refused because he had lied to his superior, saying he had sent the check out and there was nothing even on the books. It was interesting.
It's unbelievable. When it comes to collecting your money, it is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Get business cards on every shoot that you work on. So
that's how
I tracked it.
Part of my whole thing is, when I do that initial deal memo, I get everybody's information so that I know who to contact after that 30 days is up. So I totally get everybody's information, because that is, like, crucial. So that, you know, you're not trying to go through pieces of paper and stuff trying to figure out who. No, it all goes on one piece of paper. And then on my invoice, I usually have that information for follow-up. So because I use QuickBooks to generate my invoices. So usually when I do that, I've got all the contact information and the email that goes in there, all of it, so that I can follow up with that email. Let me tell you, I leave a hell of a paper trail. It's not yellow breadcrumbs anymore. It's like a serious paper trail. It's constant, you know, and because I collect for other people, you know, it makes such a huge difference. Because then I'm following up on other people's money.
Right.
You know, and it's a constant thing. You know, so just when I think I've got it down pat, something comes and goes, no, you don't quite have it, because they just changed all the vendor rules and stuff. So if you're not set up in the system as a vendor, it becomes very, very difficult. Very, very difficult.
Right.
So you always have to make sure that you're set up.
Right.
So, you know, anything can, I mean, like Sarah just said, it can vary anywhere from 30 to 120 days, most definitely. And when you deal with Warner Brothers, literally, you have to physically put that information in the mail. After you've gone through the invoicing process and they've generated a purchase order number for you, you've got to put that purchase order number onto the actual invoice,
mm-hmm.
then put the invoice with the purchase order and mail them physically to an address in Arizona, and then wait for them to get back to you. And
then
don't even
some
try to
companies that only pay on the 20th of every month.
Yes, that's true. And
mm-hmm.
some companies that they cut their checks every Thursday.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, if you miss that period, you got to wait until next Thursday.
And also the ones that work on floats.
Yeah.
They don't even have the money and they're hiring you.
Yes.
And you don't get it till they get it.
It's unbelievable, but I mean that's one of the biggest things is understanding how you're trying to get paid, and that's something that I keep trying to tell students that they have to understand how to do that. So how to make that deal memo, how to and basically understanding what a freelancer is. I don't
mm-hmm.
think a lot of people understand what it is.
Keep those records.
Yeah.
What?
I said keep the records because if you work for a company more than once and the total's over $600, then you have to produce a 1099.
Look,
now,
definitely.
If you work for them only once in the year and it's under $600 and they don't make you fill out an I-9, then 9 times out of 10, they haven't reported you and you're not required to do a 1099.
Right, but you know what?
I have an accountant.
Because I bill for people, every time, if it's something new, even if it's under $600, as long as I have to send in a
you
form.
You're still giving
to them.
An I-9?
Mm-hmm.
I'm
the one that submits it. So they might not have submitted it, but I submit it, you see. Every time it's new, I submit one.
Right.
So I send in that form.
Do you know that the I-9s are downloadable on the Internet?
They are.
I fill out that W-9 and send in to them.
Yeah, I keep one on my desktop with everything filled out except for who the vendor is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put that in there and then print it out or fax it or mail it.
Well, you have to make sure that that's a 2007 form.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got the updated one.
Right, yeah, because 2007 is the latest one.
Yeah.
So, I have it scanned, and I email that out. So every time I submit an invoice to somebody that I've never worked with before, I send that in. I accompany the invoice with that because then that way they can't say they don't have it. I send them together.
Right, exactly, because they will say that to hold up the process of paying you.
Yeah, they will.
Most definitely. I mean, I try to let people know that a freelancer, I have like 9 steps to basically tell you. Do you pay your own insurance? You're a freelancer. Do you receive 1099s at the end of the year? You're a freelancer. Secure a gig? Are you on the hunt for the next one? You're a freelancer. You never get a day off or take a vacation? No
oh,
work.
Oh, my
no-
God. Say that again. Wait. Say it slowly. Say that again. never take a day off or never get a vacation.
He said, no work equals no pay. You are a freelancer.
Amen.
Do you file for unemployment in between jobs?
Amen.
You're a freelancer. Are you responsible for your own taxes, Social Security, etc.? Freelancer.
Freelancer.
Do you complete more than one W-9 form a year? Freelancer.
Freelancer.
Yes.
Do you contribute to your own IRA? Freelancer. You invoice after every job. You are a freelancer.
Do you keep all your mileage?
No, do you save all your call sheets so you can prove that you actually worked those places you're claiming that you have mileage for?
That
oh, my
is.
Gosh.
You know, so that, I mean, that's it. It's like recognizing that that's what you do. You know, a lot of people don't get it. They don't understand that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's like one of the biggest things that you know, trying to get students to learn that's what they have to understand, that going out after leaving school,
yeah,
you have stepped into the world of uncertainty.
Yeah, especially Marietta, when you say, you know, filing for unemployment between jobs, and most people, you know, they don't even have a clue that they could do something like that. Especially if you don't work in, like, if you don't work in film and television, then you really, you know, would never even consider that. But, you know, as long as you're getting paid through that payroll company, you know, you have that option.
It's taken out, first of all. And it's,
yeah.
You know, a lot of, I mean, I, you know, people frown down upon unemployment. I still
I
see that.
That fed my kids in between films.
That's right.
I was one of the first ones. Before my job was over, I opened up that claim.
Yeah, exactly.
So that waiting period of 1 week overlapped, so that by the time I got the last check from production company, the next check was coming from unemployment. A fine science, so that, you know, I knew how to make it work. I had it down to a fine science in between movies, and because that's not what happens. It doesn't matter how much money you save. You pull that savings out to live on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So unemployment will take care of, you know, that gas. The first thing, one rule of thumb, as soon as I got off a job, before I finished, like a couple of days, I would go to the grocery store and stock up on everything possible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can be unemployed and hungry, too.
Right.
It's the truth.
I think I've been on and off unemployment since probably 2001. I might file, you know, two, three times a year.
I remember filing for unemployment. On unemployment, and just finished a movie with James Earl Jones, on unemployment and working in the kitchen of a restaurant washing dishes for $60 under the table.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep the money in for the next gig.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. One good thing about the unemployment, though, is they don't, you know, they don't pretty much recognize those jobs that aren't paid through a payroll.
Right.
Right.
Because I remember working for a television news station, of course, you know, they paid me at the end of the month, you know, like once or twice a month, I can't remember, but it wasn't paid through a payroll. They cut me a check each time. So I was, you know, getting that money every month and then on unemployment. So if I wasn't on a film gig, it was okay because I had that and I had my unemployment.
Good. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I'm working other jobs in between, you know, corporate videos, music videos, whatever.
Right. You know, but now with all this electronic stuff is that, you know, I try to explain to them that you have to be very careful when you open your claim. You open that claim when you know that you've got a couple of weeks in between gigs.
Right.
And
right.
Not when you the job 3 days later. It makes no sense.
Right.
You know, because when they if you're caught, the penalty is too much.
Yeah.
So you have to understand that you know, you do it in between. You know that the jobs are going to be, you know, there's a little bit of distance in between jobs to help buffer.
Yeah.
That time, it makes such a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The other thing that I wanted to touch upon was set etiquette.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, that's an important one. I'm going to just sit back because I'll just let you speak on that.
You know, it's over the years I've had some interesting things happen to me. You know, I when I was doing Tina Was Love got to do with it. I got into a head-on collision. I almost lost my life, and you know, there I was hooked up to a heart monitor, and the producers called me in the hospital to tell me to clean my department up. My second, and I'm not going to call any names, my second the ambulance had barely taken me away before she stepped into the producer's office and said, I want her salary.
Wow.
Now, if somebody hires you to work with them, you're supposed to be their backbone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to go in and put a dagger right in their heart.
Right.
You know, and it's understanding that when people give you an opportunity, it's be gracious for that opportunity and work with them, not against them.
Mm-hmm.
Not times like that is not the time for you to step in and try to take over in a positive light. And if the producers see fit, they will automatically change your salary. You don't have to. You know what I mean? You don't have to initiate that and stuff. But the mere fact you initiated that says a whole lot of things about you. So
right.
It meant I had to clean up a whole lot of stuff, you know?
Right.
And understanding, you know, when somebody brings you in to work with them, that's not the time for you to walk along the set and hand out your business card.
Oh.
And
that's number one.
So it's really overstepping your boundaries. It's that person's kind enough to bring you in. You let them set the tone for what you should be doing. You don't set the tone. You let them set, you know, understanding how that works.
And you pretty much just answered somebody's question. She asked, how do you finesse the fine line of being professional and not overstepping with being memorable? My response is, you're not there to be memorable. You know,
if someone hired you
to come to work with them, you're not there to be memorable. It doesn't matter if the producer remembers you or not. It doesn't matter if the actors remember you or not.
Irrelevant.
That's not what you're there for.
You know, you are there to be, to help them. That's what it's about. It's not about for you to, you know, it's trust me, people see what you're doing when you're doing
mm-hmm.
it, even though you're not looking. So it's not for you to be prancing around like a pony.
Right.
Or to look busy doing nothing. That is by far the worst, looking busy doing nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
you know,
that's an example of a guy that I'm working with now. I mean, he's walking around trying to look busy. He's all over the set. I mean, all over the set, and he's just, you know, he's touching up people that aren't even on camera. And it's
I'm
like,
sorry.
I mean,
I'm
exhausted looking at him.
It is the worst. To me, that is by far one of the worst things to try to look busy doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just do your job. Every actor doesn't necessarily want you in their face constantly.
Right.
You have to set tone to find out who wants, and even if they do, they don't want you sticking their hands in their faces all the time. It's a matter of, you know, you can look sometimes and everything's okay. You don't need to touch them. It's fine, you know. But
mm-hmm.
but that trying to look busy is just nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
You're not doing anything. No,
they're looking goofy when everybody else is sitting there going, what are
right. you doing? Right. So while I'm sitting down resting, you know, watching the monitor, you know, he's walking around just touching up people and, oh, he needs anti-shine and he needs this and he needs that and he's not even on camera. So when he is on camera, guess what you're going to do? You're going to go back and you're going to put more anti-shine on him. You're wasting your product.
It's so stupid. It's just so silly. That's a good to really get fired.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to be memorable.
it's a good way
to be memorable. And that's the thing. That's how you become memorable when you do stuff like that. And you don't want to be remembered that way.
You know, and so I've had some really, really good experiences. You know, it's like trying to take the lead. And sometimes I find, having been a department head as long as I've been, that sometimes you have to delegate and there's no explanation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's always explain. So just take the cue and just do what you need, what you're expected to do. Sometimes they can't always explain to you at that moment. And I it's so funny because when I was doing, I forgot what movie it was. I had a makeup artist work with me, and one of the principal actors came in to be done, and I just said to her, "Can you do them?" And I saw what she was using, and I knew it was the wrong thing. So I just politely stepped behind, and I handed her the product that I thought she should be using. Well, that's your cue to just follow my lead and go ahead and put that product on,
mm-hmm.
and like without missing the beat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No. She took the product. What is this? Why are you giving me this?
Making
why
a fuss in front
this?
Of the actor.
Right, and the actor said, "I'll come back when Marietta is ready."
Oh.
But you touched my face.
Wow.
You know, I'm like, oh my God. Like, you gotta know how to take cues. You gotta
mm-hmm.
know how to follow that lead when it's given to you. Sometimes it's not appropriate to come up. You know, I can come up right there to the actor and go, well, I don't like what she's using, so you got to put this on, you know. No, it's like I'm handing it to you. Just kind of take it and just continue, like, you know, without missing a beat. He wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah,
he just
wouldn't
have known the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very interesting learning how to take, you know, literally learning how to take direction. That's crucial, really crucial. Anybody gives you the opportunity to come on and work with them, learn how to take that direction. Because you can make it bad for them and even worse for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, oh, don't hire her. Nope, don't want him. Don't want her. Nope, had enough. You know, so it's like, you know. So it's like people who were, like, busy, like, real, real busy, you know. It's like, I don't like working with them either.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're too busy, I can't handle that.
Yeah.
So it's like, learn how to take the cue, you know. Learn, you know, and sometimes I find that I used to be a control freak. Used to be. But I learned, you know, used to be the operative words, okay? I found that once you deliver the end result, I don't really care how you get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really don't care. I'm not interested anymore. I used to be, but I don't care about that anymore. I just want to see the end results. So I don't care if you put the lips on first and then get the rest of the face on. I don't care. Forget it. That's irrelevant to me. You know, I just want to see the end result. Unless there's something specific that I'm going for. Then I want you to go 1, 2, 3, you know. But other than that, just give me the end results. And that's all I ask for is just the end results.
Right.
You know, it's like understanding, you know, and there's a science to me in working with somebody and taking that direction. But I've worked with people who have hired me, and I don't know, maybe they were nervous because they hired me and didn't give me any direction. And then complained the whole time it was way too much for them to do. So I'm like, if you hire me, I need to take direction from you, because I'm a take charge kind of person, so I won't go in and take charge, but then you wouldn't want me back.
Right.
So I prefer you to give me that lead to let me know where you want me to go, the direction you want me to go in, so that I don't take over, especially when I see you doing dumb stuff, even though you're in charge. And it happened to me since I moved here in Florida. Somebody hired me and never gave me any direction. But she was running all over the set. I said, you know, it was really, I could really help you if you just told me. Just let me know, who do you need me to do? Oh, I got it. She's from one end to the other. Huffing and puffing. I said, you know, I could really help you if you just, do you need me to go in and touch it so-and-so? Well, after 3 hours, she finally said, well, okay, can you watch so-and-so for me? But with an attitude. Well, 3 hours ago, what I asked you was like, you know, hello, you know. Give me the direction, because I don't want to overstep my boundaries.
Right.
And take charge when then you, you know, turn around and say, well, I came and took over. I don't necessarily want to take over if I'm working with you, you know?
Right.
So it's, you know, it's understanding where you stand.
Well, don't feel bad about taking over. My sister always takes over when she works with me.
I knew you were going to go there.
Look, they see whenever I'm whenever I department head a show and she's my key, they'll always tell me they'll say you're department head, but she's running the show or something like that. Trust me, she does. She runs.
Oh my goodness.
She is like,
I'm not even gonna comment.
But she knows it's true.
That's sisterly love.
That's all it is, Mariana. That's all it is.
Now, the other thing I was going to touch upon a little bit is just breaking down that script.
Oh, my God.
I find that a lot of, you know, break that script down. And I've been teaching script breakdown at Cosmix. I teach at Cosmix occasionally, and I've been teaching script breakdown. And you know, when I give these students a little intro to film, and they realize, they're like, "Oh, I didn't realize it was so much."
And they don't get it.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, I've been teaching them how to break the script down. What's been good is I've been using the script and then showing the movie, so they could see how close they've gotten to what the actual movie is like. And that's been working really well. Because a lot of them don't get it, don't realize what's necessary and how prepared you need to be when you're doing film.
Right.
You know, they just don't get how prepared you need to be. It's so much more involved than just going in there and just doing it.
Right.
And you need to know what you're doing and how you interact with, how makeup interacts with hair and wardrobe, because especially if you're doing like a period movie.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's a period movie and the makeup is one thing and the hair and the wardrobe's not correct, you know. I mean, everything, all three elements have to go together.
Research.
Mm-hmm.
Total research. You know, I encourage students to literally start building morgues if they don't have any morgues, to start building and putting that morgue together. So, you know, I'm the kind of person that you go into the doctor's office and the page is missing out of the magazine. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? I'm the one that ripped it out. You know, because it's so, so important to literally figure out what's going on before you go in there, so you know how to shop, you know how to prep the makeup look, you know every day what you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Marietta?
Yeah?
Did you work at Stompin' as a Savoy?
No, I did not. That was Marie Carter.
Okay. That's why I got kind of confused for a second, so I just had to ask.
No, trust me. IMDb merged our resumes for years. Finally, this year, I got them to remove most 99% of Marie's credits. I think there's one thing left on there.
It was
the most confusing thing on the planet. I had phone calls and people calling asking where could they send my check to and stuff. I'm like, I didn't do that.
Yeah, because, see, I worked with Marie Carter, and I was going, wait a minute, that's weird, because I was looking at your IMDb, and I went, wait, it's got Josephine Baker's story, but that was Marie Carter.
No. The IMDb had, there's one thing still on there that's hers that they haven't taken off.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You have no idea how difficult this has been for me. Because
God bless.
I think everything else, because I don't go by Marie, I go by Marietta.
Right.
Yeah, I go by, it was either Marietta A. Carter or Marietta Carter Narcisse after I got married. That's why I kept the card, that's why I hyphenated my name.
So that there'd be no more confusion.
Yeah, but it didn't help because They merged everything together. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, that was quite an experience for me, let me tell you.
God bless.
You know what I did when I did the Jackson's American Dream? Vanessa Williams thought I was Marie Carter just by the name. And she came to the trailer door, and she was looking, and she was peeping in the door.
Yes, and
she
did Stompin' at the Savoy with me. Vanessa Williams was in Stompin' at the Savoy, too. So was, that was a huge cast for Stompin' at the Savoy.
Right? Vanessa was in that one, right?
Yes, she was.
Right? Oh, okay, that's why she came at the trailer door, and she looked at me, and she went, oh, thank God. Oh, okay, you're not Marie. No, she wiped her brow. I was like, okay, all right. I have to discuss off air the conversation. I can't.
Marietta, since you were talking about script breakdown, I always have to think back to this one story that you would tell about Malcolm X and Denzel, working with Denzel. And I would love for you to share just a little bit of that story about how you had to lock the trailer door and it was just you and Denzel on the trailer and all that great stuff. I just love that story, and I just want you to tell just a little bit of it.
Oh yeah. Well, that movie was just, you know, I had 50 makeup and hair people under me, and that movie was really one of the biggest challenges of my entire career. And Spike... pretty much, you know, one of the things you do as makeup artist is you work that interface with the AD department, especially when a movie of that magnitude. And, you know, I said, you know, you'll get more mileage if you shoot this particular scene this way. And, you know, then I can change Denzel over and you could shoot something else while I'm changing him over, because I've worked with him before and I know it's going to take a certain amount of time. And, so pretty much when it was time to make that transition from Denzel Washington, from actually Malcolm Little into Malcolm X, I literally got everybody out the trailer because Denzel's a method actor. I got everybody out the trailer, cleared the trailer because I knew that transition was going to take long. You can't hurry Denzel, okay? So I locked the doors. So there's me and Denzel in the trailer, and we literally choreographed the moves to make him into Malcolm X. Well, the first AD had worked with me, so he knew what I was like. He knew I had a temper. that being the operative word, okay. So they said, Spike was like getting really pissed off, like, okay, so what's taking her so long? So literally, the first AD, well, you can send all them other people under me, but I'm not going to the trailer, so... Nobody came to knock on the trailer door because they knew I was going to kill him. So Spike finally got really pissed off, and he goes, What's taking so long? So Randy said, if you want her, you go get her yourself because I'm not going. So he came knocking on the trailer door, Spike. He came knocking on the trailer door. So finally, he's like, this is Spike. Open up the door. So I opened the door. I didn't say a word. When he looked in and he saw that it was no longer Malcolm Little or Denzel Washington sitting in that chair, all he saw was Malcolm X, that transformation, because this was the first time he was seeing him. He literally closed the door back gently, and he said, you take all the time you need. When you're done, you can come out. And that was a testimony to my work with Denzel. I mean, it literally, the transformation was so strong that he turned around and he closed that door. And, you know, Spike called me after we were finished that movie. He said to me, you know, you're the worst bitch I've ever worked with. And I'll probably never work with you again. But thank you for making my movie look good.
Wow.
And, I mean, it was so intense because the transformation I knew was going to be difficult. It was good because I had beards made for Denzel. We had beards. I had everything colored and stuff. But, you know, making a full beard and then trying to put it on an actor who's a method actor is, like, impossible. So I had to cut that beard down and apply it in, like, 6 pieces. The beard, the mustache I applied in 2 pieces. The beard I cut down from the chin and then I built it back up so that he could move his face. you wouldn't put contacts in because you can focus with contacts and then glasses too? Because Malcolm has the same color eyes as I look more like Malcolm X than Denzel Washington does. Let's face it, okay?
That's true.
But, you know, but totally, completely, there was no way to get him in contacts and glasses, plus all the facial hair, plus a wig, plus all the different elements I had to do with the character, you know, highlights and shadows and stuff. There was no way to do all of that on him and him focused too. It just wasn't going to work. So we had to come up with the best of both worlds that could work, you know what I mean? So it was quite a bit of work to get to that stage. So he wasn't going to wear contacts. So the beard, I couldn't put it on. He had to be able to speak in it. So we had to cut it down all the way down and then build it back up, which is time consuming. So when we choreographed all of this the first day, because we didn't know where it was going to go, you know, Spike had to wait, and he had to wait quite a long time. But if he had shot the scenes in different orders, he wouldn't have had to wait that kind of time, because he could have shot scenes without Denzel in it. But he wanted to do what he wanted to do, and I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So it was conflict, conflict, conflict.
So basically, you would have never come to that point had you, one, not read the script, two, not broken the script down, three, if you hadn't researched who in the heck Malcolm X was.
It was before I even went to New York. I took about four boxes of research to New York with me from L.A. I was in L.A. I was in New York for 6 months doing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I prepped in L.A. for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm X, like any other movie I'd ever done, Malcolm X had the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and the 1970s. Six decades in it.
Mm-hmm.
Six.
Talk about the size of your background crew.
Oh, yeah. And I hired every working artist and every available artist in New York I hired off of Broadway. I mean, it was beyond the scope of anything I'd ever done. And it required a lot of research. And because he's a historical figure and everything's documented, the research had to be accurate. It just couldn't be haphazard. There was no room for me to wing anything in Malcolm X. I came home from that movie weighing 115 pounds.
Mm.
Wow. God, I would think to weigh that now. There was no room for error. I mean, I never slept on that movie. I never, ever slept. It was a lot of work. You know, so, but I was prepared. There was nothing that they could bring up that I couldn't answer. I was totally prepared. My continuity was so tight on that movie. You know, I was totally prepared, totally prepared. And I mean, that's one of the biggest things is researching and having all your notes and reading that call sheet every night so that you know what you're going to do every day, the next day you walk in. And having all your continuity notes in order so that you're not trying
exactly.
to wing it. You can't wing a movie with seven periods in it.
Mm-mm.
Right. At
all. Well, Marianne, let me ask you, and Sarah too, do you all think that the AD department really understands the job of a makeup artist?
No.
That's why they call it a bluff and puff, which I absolutely hate.
No, they don't. They don't. And neither does the producers or the directors, because the directors that are coming out now, they're all textbook directors. They don't learn in school the relationship of makeup, hair, and wardrobe
no.
to the character and to the whole development of the production. They're textbook people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand.
They haven't learned their craft from the ground up like George Lucas has done or Steven Spielberg, who respect every department for what they do.
Right.
The best person I've ever worked with who really understands is Joel Schumacher, who was a costume designer. Joel
there
Schumacher is the consummate artist. He can come into the trailer in the morning, and he is the only director I've ever worked with who could come up to me and go, "Good morning, Marietta. How was your evening yesterday?" "Oh, Friday. Why don't you bring Justy and Gregoire to the set for lunch?" The only director who could tell me my nanny's name and my baby's name. You know, that and to me says something, but because he came from crew.
Yeah. They're the best ones. The ones that have come from the bottom up, that have worked their way through, and who really know the ins and outs of everything that goes on the set are the only ones that truly respect everybody for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But as Marietta said, it's the truth. We have all these newbies coming up who have learned from a book, or they've gone to school and they come right out and want to be directors. They don't want to be a PA or you know, somebody in the lower end of the spectrum, and they have no knowledge, no idea what we do at all, and no respect for what we do.
Or for anything.
They have, you just said it, they have no respect for what we do. When I did, what's that movie I did with that director? Oh, God, I think it was 187? No, not 187. The Negotiator. I finally, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I finally went up to him and I said, you know what, you need to get you somebody to home in your bed, because there's no reason why at 3 o'clock in the morning you should have us on a set inside and you're shooting an inanimate object. We should be going, we should be home while you're shooting that little beep or whatever it is you're shooting.
Yeah, exactly. Do your shots so that you have the least amount of people on set and the most when you need them.
It makes no sense. Like, where did you learn, you know?
My favorite is when they have you do blood gags in the beginning of the day with the actor, knowing it's going to stain their skin and then want them pristine by the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. It's like, stupid.
I think it's safe to say that they're not learning, for one, because, for instance, here in Atlanta, of course, now you have all the productions here in Atlanta, so you don't have enough crew for any department. So, you know, you may have crew coming from L.A., you may have crew coming from the Carolinas or Florida or wherever. And then you have people coming off of the street who just want a job. And, you know, because you're a friend of an AD or a friend of a PA, and, you know, and they know this person or that person, and then they tell their second AD, hey, I got a guy who can work the next 3 days. And so they come in, and then another person is bumped up to second AD, and they have no clue. They don't know anything about the paperwork. They don't know anything about anything.
Offshoot of that, there's a new little scam going on down in Georgia that production companies for reality shows are advertising in Craigslist and looking for makeup and hair people. And there was a student who had just come out of training. Mm-hmm. Answered one of those ads and asked how much he'd get paid, and they said, oh, we're not paying, but we can offer you union hours. No, they can't. They can't do
what?
That. I mean, oh, yeah, that's the new scam, and the new you know, students coming up have no clue that that's not legal and they can't do that, that they can't offer them hours. They will get nothing from it. It's a big scam to get free labor.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And that's going on in Georgia?
It's in Georgia.
Oh, God.
This just happened about a month ago. A friend of mine had a student call her.
Wow. Hmm. That's why students really have to investigate.
I notified the union in New York because it's their jurisdiction to let them know what was going on. And they said, you know, they said exactly what I said, was no, they can't do that. And I said, I know that. I just want you to know that that's going on. But what the other thing is trying to find out if this reality television show has a union contract and is trying to usurp it.
Mmm.
That's another thing for people to be on the lookout for. If it's in Craigslist, it's not legit.
No, it's not.
Plain and simple.
Not on a union project, it's not.
If it's not showing up in Hollywood Reporter or SAG newspapers or the union newsletter, it's not legit.
Exactly.
But, you know, but aren't these things supposed to be listed with the film commission in the areas?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
But like I said, some of them are trying to get around it because they don't want to have to pay the union contracts.
Exactly, and that's the thing. You have makeup artists coming from 706, and they come from from LA and 706, and you know they don't even try to call everybody on the list. You know, on the union roster, they just hire whoever they want to hire. If they have friends that they know that live in Georgia who work at the makeup counter, they're going to call them.
Really? And
yeah,
unless,
get them,
unless
get them on and
get them we're
out.
Diligent and know they're doing that.
Exactly.
And that's, we have to be very aware of that and then notify 798. Look, 706 has not called any of us.
Yep.
That happened on Black Knight in North Carolina.
In Wilmington, yeah.
Yeah. She brought
really?
Us in. To do, oh, it was horrible. She was a political hire. They had makeup on it. And she had, those of us that were there who had just finished doing laying hair for 8 weeks on Patch Adams, it was all 1970s, it was all mutton chops, and we were hand laying everything because we had 1,000 extras every day. So she had us come in to test. She decided she didn't like what we did and told the union that none of us were qualified, which was a load of hooey,
mm-hmm.
and brought
they
in everybody from 706 because she didn't want to hire anybody locally anyway.
Right.
Wow.
And another thing that they're doing is they're interviewing people from 798 and offering some people jobs. And then when you call back because you haven't heard from anybody, you know, they'll pretend like, I wasn't under the impression that I offered you the job, or we weren't under the impression that the producer offered you the job. And so people are stuck like, wait a minute, I thought I was going to be on this job for 4 months, but now you're telling me I don't have a job. And then, of course, on the crew list, they've already hired people from L.A.
Yep.
Because, number one, our rates in 798 are much higher than 706's rates. So
right.
why not get someone for a little bit cheaper? But then, yes, you have to put them up, housing per diem. But guess what? The tax incentive is so lovely that it allows productions from L.A. to come into Georgia. And, you know, they get kickbacks off of all of these people. So it doesn't really matter anyway.
Yep. Yeah, it's getting pretty cutthroat out there, because LA doesn't have the work they used to have. So wherever there's work, they're dragging their people with them.
LA didn't have the work at all.
Uh-oh.
LA doesn't have work. LA does not have the work
at all.
No.
LA does not have the work. Nope. Not even an issue. They do not have the work.
Mm-mm.
And here's the thing. Just because they came from L.A. doesn't mean they're the best makeup artists.
Thank you. Because some of them are very lazy, but I'm going to stop right
there.
Oh,
my gosh.
Stop here now. You need to stop. I'm still a 706.
Well, not Marietta.
There are a few that are exceptions to the rule. Sorry, Marietta. We've just been burned over here on the East Coast a lot.
Not you. We're not talking about you.
No, not you. We like you.
Oh, boy.
Just have to keep it real for a little bit.
Oh,
now,
boy.
Oh, my goodness.
No, this business is very interesting. It's changing a lot.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
It has changed a tremendous amount. It because does 798 still do the union tax?
No, but what they've done, they're changing the categories now. It was just in the newsletter just recently that they're going to call it apprentice and journeyman. There's going to be two categories. For a while there, we had entry level, jurisdictional, and then journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Which got to be very confusing. So now they're really dividing it up. But to get to leave from apprenticeship, you have to go through their classes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still 30-hour minimum to get in as an apprentice. So you want to get in doing extras on a film in a right-to-work state. That's the easiest way to get in. If somebody wants to get in, just ask all the people in North Carolina that got in on Patriot. They grab people out of salons to put dirt on people.
Days? Sarah.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Is it 30 days?
Yeah, 30 hours, 30 days, yes.
Just to be on an apprentice, right? Or
just to be an apprentice, yes. Then, and you have your entrance fee, but then in order to move to journeyman, they're requiring a bunch of different classes and then money to advance up, but you have to pass the classes. So it's not really a test But it is. Does that make sense? They're not calling it a test, but they're calling it classes that you have to go through, but you have to master the classes. If you don't master the classes, all of them, then you don't get to move out of apprentice to journeyman.
It's a, you know, did they had the test before, right? Did you take that test?
No, when I joined over 20 years ago, I had accrued already 255 hours before I had to join because I was in North Carolina, right to work state.
Oh.
So I had, when I sent my documentation, it was in a huge box.
Okay.
Because
I had made
that decision that when I was going to join, I was going to have the knowledge when I walked into the union. I did not want to go in and put up with all the garbage that had been set up. And so I got my training by being on set and doing. And I had 255 hours before I ever joined.
Yeah. See, I took the test when I was doing GOV.
Well, see, the problem was when I tried to take the test, you know, they wanted you to pay, like, I think it was like a deposit of like $500 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they could never get enough people to take the test. So they would never offer it.
It was three of us when I took the test in LA.
See, that's what I don't understand. Why couldn't it be just if two people or one person wanted to take it, then why couldn't it just
be when I took it, it was myself, Robin Siegel, and Ronnie Spector.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the three of us. It was grueling.
Spector from the Ronettes?
No, that's what I thought. Let me tell you, funny joke.
I was going, hey, wait a minute.
I told Whoopi, I said, I'm taking my test, because I was doing Whoopi Goldberg at the time. I said, I'm taking my test with Ronnie Spector from the Ronettes. She said, tell her that I am one of her biggest fans. So I go in there and I say to Ronnie, I said, Whoopi Goldberg is one of your biggest fans. She goes, sorry, honey, you got the wrong Rhonda. I almost died. I was so embarrassed. I came back and I told Whoopi, I said, wrong person. Because that's who I thought it was, too, because that's the only Ronnie Spector I'd ever heard of. So it was, like, so funny. She was like, sorry, wrong person, wrong Rhonda.
Oh, that's funny.
Now, basically, for the classes, they're requiring, you know, hair laying, bald cap application, basic effects,
cut, burn, eyes.
I'm sorry?
Cut, burn, bruise, black eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to go through the classes.
Okay. Okay.
So what they're basically doing, and you have to go to New York to do it because they're not bringing them down the South.
Right. You have to go to New York. So you have to make the effort to spend that money.
Yeah.
And the fee has gone up, too, as well.
Now, some people don't realize that you do need to understand what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do. It bothers me if I get someone on a set that, you know, says, oh, I know all this and that about makeup, and then I'm looking at them and go, hey, that person's over there sunburned. I need you to go correct that. And they look at me like I have two heads. I said, do you understand what I'm trying to tell you?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like,
no.
Not quite. And they've come from a certain school, and all they know is that certain school's makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they have no clue how to make any adjustments with anything else but that school's makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's so true. Lots of them don't understand.
They don't really have
the
color theory, so that they can just wing it when they have to.
Yeah.
Gotta have the color theory. It's so doggone important.
Yeah.
Especially for corrective. And with HD, everybody's got to know color theory and correction because the camera pulls to the reds.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that has any red base to it will be stronger, and that's not what it used to be, but that's what it is now, that the HD cameras pull to the red. So if you've got someone who's really ruddy, then you've got to do the correction, otherwise they're going to look even worse on camera.
Yeah. And what's with makeup artists just wanting to be beauty makeup artists? And not, I mean, if you want to do just beauty, then there's a place for that. But you can't come to the film environment and do just beauty.
No, you can't.
And you have to be able to cover tattoos.
Yes, and it's not just one color.
Right.
You've got to be an artist. I mean,
and these are people that are in the union.
What?
I know. She's talking about people in the union that don't have the basic knowledge in order to come in and cover a tattoo.
That's because...
Or to do corrective makeup if someone's got scarring on their face or port wine stain birthmarks. They don't know.
You know, that's because...
But that's because they've allowed Sam Couch and the Duffy to get into the union.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're in these cities where they're, you know, like New Orleans, for instance. You know, I know a lot of people that got into the union, hair and makeup. And, you know, and because they, you know, when they first started working on a film, you know, somebody made them the head of the department because they didn't have crew. And so now they think they're it because they've department headed, you know, two or three movies in New Orleans, and, you know, they move to Atlanta and think they've arrived. I don't think so.
No, I know.
Totally agree with you.
It's
totally
a fight out there now,
you,
and it's kind of sad.
Yeah. And never worked a day in a background on a period movie. Never had to bust out 500 extras a day with, you know, a total of like 8 makeup, 8 hair doing 1950s.
And that they know what a period movie is. Hello.
Thank you.
Have no clue.
Yeah, we had 4 of us on a George Lucas period film, 2 hair, 2 makeup, 200 extras, 2 hours.
Mm.
Talk about whipping some hair and some lips on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a lot of work.
And that's the other thing. Have you noticed that they get slow?
Yeah.
That there's
that's
no speed, that they don't
work.
Know how to budget their time and do the speed and still make it look good?
No.
Wait a minute. That's all you had working with you?
What, for that, two hair, 2 makeup, and 200 extras, 2 hours? Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it was fun. You start doing conveyor belts, you know, at that point.
No kidding.
Yeah, you have like 3 blush colors so you can kind of alternate it and a couple of reds. And,
yeah,
but, and
definitely.
That's it. You just end up cranking.
That's a lot of work, honey.
I can do people fast now. It was a great training ground.
You know what? And one thing I want the listeners to know is that we're not just ranting and raving, and we're definitely not trying to put anybody down, but we're just pretty much telling you the state.
This is what's going on
now.
This is what's happening now.
Exactly. And if you're interested in going in this area, you need to know.
Yeah.
You know, because this may not be for you. Or it could be for you, and if it is, you need to know exactly what's going on.
And not just that, but especially if you want to be in the union, you must know that now $798, I think, is like $4,700 now.
Yes.
706 may be $5,000 plus. I'm not sure. So just know that those are the, you know, just the dues just to get in, and then you're going to pay quarterly dues, and then you're going to pay.
You know, you're going into an industry that you need to go in with your eyes open and not use rose-colored glasses. But, you know, once you get jobs, a couple of jobs takes care of that union dues right away, and you don't have to pay it all one time.
Yeah, a couple of jobs will, but let's say somebody got in now. I know people now who've been in for 2 years still haven't paid their dues because, you know, they're just not getting the work.
Yeah, the economy. Well, the economy is definitely a factor.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
so
about now, I think that.
I'll tell you, I feel blessed to have the morning gig I have
because mm-hmm.
I have friends that haven't worked in a year.
Yeah,
I have a lot of friends in LA that haven't been working.
But that's what you need to realize, that just because you get into the union doesn't mean you're going to work all the time.
No,
well,
it does not.
A lot of people abuse. They think that the union is an employment agency,
and it's not.
No.
The
All
union
it is a contract negotiator. That's it.
No, the union is to protect you as a worker, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. That's about it.
That's what it's for. And if you understand that that's what it's for, then it makes a big difference. But it's to protect, because when you're doing an independent film that's not union, if they want to work you for 28 hours in the day, they can. There's nobody to pull the plug. However, if you're in a union set, if they're going to work you 28 hours, they have to not only feed you, but they have to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the big difference. That it's for employee protection.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You get health and welfare benefits, and you have a pension plan. I mean, that's pretty much it. So that's the huge difference between the union and the non-union. A lot of people don't understand that. They think the union's going to get them work. No. The union availability roster is a courtesy.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that's pretty much so that your peers, if they if you're available, they want to hire you, they can hire you. But it's just not an employment agency, and people shouldn't be confused with the two.
Right.
You know, but a lot of people get confused with the two, and whether they should join, and, you know. I say to anybody, if you get the opportunity to join the union, join, because as a freelancer, you have to take care of all those things yourself.
Mm-hmm.
At least if you're in the union and you work on a film or a television set, even a video or a commercial that's unionized, you pretty much have the opportunity, if you work the qualifying hours, then you can get some of the best available insurance in this country, you know, which is really
mm-hmm.
great.
It
when
really
you got
is.
To talk to yourself and your family, it's a whole different ballgame. And you do have
yeah.
to have a pension plan. Other than that, you better look to get an IRA for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are some very strong benefits to being part of a union. There's always somebody to fight for you. If that producer is going to be a dickhead, literally, you can call up the union and they will take care of that producer.
Yeah, they will.
You know,
now, you know, I haven't done a union gig in a while, but I still hold on to my card. And
yeah,
that is, I pay $49 quarterly just to hold on to the card.
Well, I took an honorable withdrawal when I left L.A., so I only pay death benefits now, you know, death dues. Like when
right,
pass.
Right.
So I might pay, you know, maybe $12 a quarter. If, you know,
yeah.
It depends. It varies between $12 and $25 a quarter and stuff. But, I mean, but I have an honorable withdrawal, but I pay my own insurance for my family.
Right.
You know, which keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does. And my husband covers mine through, he works for the shipyard.
Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
at least
that's how mine's
well,
covered.
So he's definitely union.
Yeah, he's definitely union.
Actually, he just pulled out of the union, but he still
oh, he
works
did?
The same job.
Oh, okay, wow.
He did. It was a long story. They
oh, okay.
kind of bailed on him when there was a layoff, and they were supposed to pay everybody's bills, and they didn't follow through.
Oh,
wow.
So he got really
yeah,
mad.
But, you know,
that's
but
enough.
I, you know,
they're not getting my money. But he still works. I mean, the union still makes the contract, so he's still protected by the union contract, even though he's not in the union anymore.
Mm-hmm.
As
well,
we would be in a right to work state.
Yep.
We
in
get the same benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. So yeah. So I mean, the union. Even if you're not in the union, you get to be on a union shoot because you're in a right to work state. You
right,
get the benefits
exactly.
still of the union.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be good protection because that, you know, protects you for turnarounds and meal penalties and those kinds of things so that you're not abused. Because
most
it'll
definitely.
Happen. We've all been there where we have been so abused.
All
we've worked.
There.
We're in the 21st hour on a, you know, on a shoot. And so
yeah.
the union protects you on that level so that you're not sitting there half asleep going, I'm going to poke somebody in the eye in a second.
Or, you know, when I was doing Baby Boy, let me tell you, the catering truck broke down and they brought in a roach coach to feed us. It was like, I don't think so. You need to come out and take care of that.
There you go.
Or you want to, you know, you work us hours and don't want to break us, so don't bring in second meal. Hello? Don't
right.
work that way. Let's talk about this.
Then
know,
you get the
so.
Really cool days. I worked on the box, a really cool day where we actually worked for 3 hours in the morning. By the time that day was done, I had gotten so many meal penalties and overtime, but I only worked 3 hours but was there for 15.
Mm-hmm.
Six of us made $934 that day.
Wow.
Because of meal penalties, and because we got meal penalties at breakfast, we got meal penalties at lunch, and then we got second meal penalties.
See, well, that if it's an independent shoot, you're not getting that.
But and you know what? And listen, I'm listening to what you're saying. You said six of you made $900 that day.
Some
makeup artists will listen to that and be like, $900? Just for that day, that's not a lot of money. But when you think about pension and welfare and all the other benefits, that's a whole lot more than getting paid $1,000 a day and nothing else. And you got to wait on the money, you know?
Exactly.
Whereas with that check, you're going to get it the following week.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, understanding that when you work on film and TV, you're paid weekly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You're paid weekly. When you freelance, well, let's just take out the term freelance.
Yeah.
When you voice, you are paid anywhere from 30 to 120 days. But when you work on a TV or a film set, you are paid weekly because you're paid by the independent payroll company, and
that's
you become
right.
You get a weekly salary for the duration of your period, you know, on that, whatever it is. If it's a reality show, sitcom, episodic, you know, regular movie, whatever it is, you're paid on a weekly basis. So you know, even if you work just one day, that you'll get that check the next week.
That's right.
But when you work, when you have to invoice, from the moment you invoice, you have to wait for a turnaround period to get that money.
All right.
Unless you're fortunate. And every once in a while, I have a company that I work for regularly each year, and they have me send my invoice in the month before I do the gig, so the night of the gig, they hand me a check.
Oh, lucky you.
I'm telling you. It has been the biggest blessing. I've done this job 8 years in a row. And after the second year, they started saying, send your invoice in the month ahead, and I did, and they had my check ready for me to hand to me that night.
Oh, see, there are several companies that I've worked with that they do that. They get all the paperwork processed and stuff so that literally you can get that check much sooner than
that. It's nice, man. It makes you feel like... They really respect. Yeah, thank you. Exactly. You're worthwhile, and they respect what you do.
That's a nice feeling.
I wonder.
That's a
real
nice
feeling.
We're almost
like masochists the way that we work in this business. It's like abuse me. But you gotta love it. That's the only reason you stay in it is because you love it.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. You have to love it. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Hey, y'all are busy in the chat room here.
Yeah, they are. Look at that.
Yeah, very busy. A lot of. I'm trying to keep up with some of these questions here.
Engineering degree.
Tyra's little sis says she's a business major, but it bores her life to death. And I said, you know, she said she feels like she's got to have it. And I said, you have to. An engineering degree won't help you in this business.
That's right.
Business will help you in any business.
Only time engineering degree helps is if you're building miniatures.
Exactly.
True.
And that's
there
not what
this,
I do.
There is money in that, though, too.
Well, we have like 6 minutes left, so are there any questions in the chat room?
Any questions? There are plenty of questions.
There's a lot of stuff going on in here. Yep, a little stuck now, but I'm, who's that? Tyra Little Sis? Tyra's Little Sis?
Uh-huh.
I was in school, too. What are you doing in school? What are you doing? Are you in makeup school?
No, she's, where are you in school?
She's at Temple.
Yeah, she's at Temple, okay.
She's where?
She's at
Temple in Philadelphia.
A Temple University?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Where did you? Did she write that? Or you just knew that.
You just knew that.
Oh, okay.
I, that, yeah.
I was going. I don't see that.
You see that, Marietta?
Yeah.
Thank you. You there are
you go.
Amazing.
You got a big thank you. I attend Temple University. Tyra just.
Marketing major.
A Temple University marketing major. That's not bad. That's actually a good degree to have.
That's
if you're
a great
be a makeup
degree.
Artist.
For some of these other makeup artists out here.
Well, that's what she wants to do. She wants to represent makeup artists.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. But we're trying to get that fee down to as close to 0% as possible. We told her we'd all let her represent us. Right
what
now,
is
we
the
pushing
going rate for representatives for makeup artists? I mean, for actors, because that's what I did for years before I ended up in makeup. It's 15% to 20%. What is it for makeup artists as far as that's concerned?
Well, so
isn't it like 20?
It's 20% to the client.
Is
yeah.
it?
Yes, yeah, 20% to the client, and I guess it varies depending on if you're doing, like for some people who just represent film, it could be 10% on a weekly basis. From, you know, because you're not billing the production company 20%, you see what I'm saying? So the 10%
right.
comes out of that weekly salary. If it's just a regular, it's anywhere from 10 to 20%.
Okay.
But if it's on
pretty
a
much
film,
like an actor
I think
would
it's,
be.
Yeah.
Marietta, I'm sorry, do you have like maybe a minute to answer the question about how you got started in film, and then maybe Sarah can answer the same question they're asking.
I just
okay.
hit on there.
But I don't know if we have time to answer, but if you can answer it quickly.
Yeah, I got started.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go on, Marietta.
Yeah, I got started, let's see, I did a video, and then through my friend Robin Siegel, who's the makeup artist in The Closer, she brought me on to my first film. But I'd already gone to school and learned how to do continuity, and, you know, I learned how to do makeup for film. So by the time I got onto a film, I knew what I was doing. I had some idea. I wasn't pulling it out of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah?
So.
Well, I started out, I got trained in makeup as a kid because my dad had been in vaudeville. And so I did acting, and then I went away to the North Carolina School of the Arts to be an opera singer. And we had to learn to do makeup. We were trained in makeup and wigs because at that time they weren't training. Now the school has a department where they're training makeup artists.
I went
in
at North Carolina School of the Arts.
Pardon?
I went in and lectured there. I did a 3-day lecture there.
Oh, awesome. So, but when I went, it was, we're talking 1976 to 80. I'm 50 years old, so it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so we were trained on wigs and makeup then, and there were a series of interesting things that would take too long to tell. I ended up falling into makeup, you know, as a profession instead of singing and acting, and turned out I was good at it. It was not where I, you know, what I thought my life was going to be, but it turned out it's been the best thing for me. So
wow.
That's how I ended up in film and television. But it's a much longer story, but there's not enough time.
and if you want to check out Sarah's opera singing, you can go back to, I think it was the
on Facebook.
Second
yeah.
or third
oh,
show.
Yes, you had me sing, I forgot.
Yes, that she did for us. So you can go back to the archived shows and check out Sarah's. I believe it was part 2 or part 3 of her show that she sang.
On the show,
you can also hear me on Facebook.
That's great. That's exciting.
That's her night job.
Thank you, ladies, very much. We really enjoyed chatting with you. The tonight show was an hour and a half because I knew we were going to get into some good stuff. So thank you very much. Thank you, Marietta, for coming back for part 2. We appreciate it.
All you guys are more than welcome. Love you so.
And don't forget to go out and check out episode 3 of Beauty Talk.
Most definitely will.
And thank you, Sarah, for hanging out the whole entire show with us.
Oh, no problem. And thank you for letting me play Marietta. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise, Sarah, it was a pleasure hanging with you. Looking forward to keeping in touch.
Oh, I just hooked up to you on Twitter.
That's so sweet.
Are you back on Facebook, Sarah?
Yes, I'm back on Facebook. My fast was done on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'll see you all on Facebook.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Oh. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I have an early call time, so I need to get in the bed. So thank you, guys.
Get some fast.
Yes, and we appreciate you, with you guys coming on, and we want you all to tune in. I think we're one more Monday, and then we're going to take a break for Thanksgiving, and then we're back to Thursday night. So we'll see you next Monday.
Be blessed.
Wonderful. Great. Good night.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night, Sarah.
Night.
Bye-bye.